This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and here in Madison, Wisconsin, it's been pretty exciting to see all the gay couples coming out, lining up to be married outside City Hall and at the Capitol and everywhere since Judge Barbara Crabb's ruling last Friday overturning Wisconsin's gay marriage ban. So congratulations are in order, and we freethinkers are also taking a cue from our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, and coming out of the closet ourselves as atheists and agnostics.
And I came out of the closet as an atheist nonbeliever in 1983. I'm Dan Barker, now known as your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is June 14th, 2014, broadcast show of Free Thought Radio. It's produced in Madison, Wisconsin. You might also be listening to us broadcast in Monterey or in Ithaca, which is where our guest lives. Andrianne will be our guest later on the show. In Grand Rapids, in Columbia, Missouri, College Station, Texas. We make the show available also as a podcast, so you can try to get Free Thought Radio also on your own local station. If you have a station that broadcasts progressive-type shows, ask. We're not just preaching to the non-converted. Go out and we can help us counter the 24/7 din of the religious right domination of our airwaves.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, which stands for Freedom From Religion Foundation. We have over 20,000 members in North America, and we work to educate the public about non-believers, non-theism, and to keep religion out of government. And I would like to invite you personally to join us today. If you're a regular listener, support FFRF, support Free Thought Radio, our legal team, our dozen lawsuits, our building campaign, our TV, print, and billboard advertising, our student scholarships. We're doing good work for Free Thought at FFRF.org.
As I said, today we're going to talk with Andrianne, the author and the producer who worked on both Cosmos series, the original 1980 Cosmos, A Personal Voyage with Carl Sagan, whom she married, and this year's Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, starring Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And that'll be a real treat because it's been quite a few years since Anne last graced Free Thought Radio. The series, of course, ended last week with a very moving episode. FFRF was pleased to be an advertiser in some major metropolitan markets on that last show. We ran our new TV spot recorded by unabashed atheist Ron Reagan, who says he's not afraid of burning in hell. And Andrianne will be on the phone with us on the second half of Free Thought Radio.
In the news, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is helping Vision Iowa see the Constitution more clearly. A few weeks ago, we reported that FFRF sent a vigorous letter of complaint through our staff attorney, Andrew Seidel, protesting the awarding of $140,000 from the state of Iowa for the purpose of a Christian park. The Iowa Economic Development Authority, a public entity via its Vision Iowa board, had awarded that $140,000 for the purpose of funding a Christian park named the Shepherd's Garden in Sioux City, Iowa. Plans included a walk of faith, a Calvary Crosses water feature, prayer spaces, crosses, and Bible verses. The plans claimed that they were differentiating between public spaces and prayer spaces.
But money is fungible. It isn't constitutional to say, oh, public funds will just pay for the grass for a Christian theme park. So we were very pleased to get notice a week ago from General Counsel for the state of Iowa, who emailed our office to say that the applicant, following our complaint and public outcry, had withdrawn from requesting the $140,000. So taxpayers and the Constitution have been spared.
So Alabama, another state where free thought is on the rise, we have our glorious fourth coming up.
Yes, it's going to be the 25th annual anniversary, the 25th anniversary of the annual Lake Hypatia Glorious Fourth. And this is in the Talladega area of Alabama, where FFRF actually owns a second Free Thought Hall, which is a beautiful auditorium seating 200 people, air conditioned, and there's kitchens and so on, and there's showers and restrooms that campers and swimmers can access from the outside.
A big lake.
And it's a big lake, and it's our Alabama Free Thought Association's annual confab, and Dan and I will be there this year. Janet Heimlich, who's the author of Breaking Their Will, Shedding Light on Religious Child Maltreatment. She's from Texas, will be there. Jerry DeWitt, the former Pentecostal minister. What do you call him, Dan?
He's always fun. Deacon DeWitt, and I'm Bishop Barker.
And he's the first graduate of the Clergy Project, came out of the closet as an atheist.
We don't use the word graduate anymore, but he's the first to have come out of the active pulpit.
And he's the author of Hope After Faith, and he'll be driving in from Louisiana. And there'll be Michael Scott, who's director of the New Metro Atlanta chapter, will be there. There's a Free Thought Jeopardy. There's Atheists versus Agnostics Volleyball. There's de-baptisms in Lake Hypatia.
Baseball, yeah.
What's volleyball this year, Dan?
Oh, is it? Okay.
Got to keep up with things. And I need to salute Pat Cleveland. The Cleveland family gave FFRF the grounds on which we built Free Thought Hall and our Atheists in Foxhills Monument, and we always have a picture of the vets in front of that. And it starts on July 3rd and goes through brunch on the 5th. And you can go to FFRF.org, our website, look under events, and look for the drop-down, either Lake Hypatia or Alabama Free Thought Association. If you want to sign up online, you can get more information about it. There are plenty of hotels in the Talladega area. Pat opens up her own family grounds for primitive camping and RVs, and is very generous in doing this every year. So maybe we'll see you over the July 4th weekend.
As we started today's show, we got the news earlier in the week that Judge Barbara Crabb, who ruled on June the 6th that Wisconsin's ban on marriage equality is unconstitutional, refused a request by Wisconsin's Republican Attorney General to halt the weddings. She denied an emergency stay request filed by the Wisconsin AG, J.B. Van Hollen. Up to 15 counties are marrying same-sex couples, and Dane County went into overdrive a week ago late Friday and over that weekend, issuing 283 licenses to same-sex couples.
And, of course, this ban on marriage equality, also civil unions, was in our state constitution, and that ban was entirely led by churches and the religious lobbies, as was true across the country. Mormon, Catholic, and fundamentalist were behind all of this. It's a fairly recent ban, and so they're having conniptions, and Bishop Morlino here in Madison has been attacking the ruling. He called it a domino falling, and by the way, did you know that he's fervently praying over the decision?
Ooh, that'll make a big difference.
So nothing fails like prayer, so go ahead, Bishop Morlino.
I'm on the Family Research Council's email list, lucky me, and I just saw that Tony Perkins, who sends those out, is now going after Judge Crabb. In 2010, she ruled in FFRF's favor that the National Day of Prayer is unconstitutional, which it clearly is, although the Seventh Circuit threw out the case not on the merits but on standing. Tony Perkins hysterically claimed that Crabb's gay marriage ruling distorts the record, it just like ours was supposedly overturned on the merits. So the religious right doesn't like freedom and equality. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio. Stay tuned to hear us talk with Andrian, the author and producer who was married to Carl Sagan, who worked on both Cosmos series, including this year's smash hit, Cosmos, A Space Odyssey, hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. It just ended its 13-week run this week, so we're going to have a very nice postmortem talk with her about all of the inside scoop on that. And then we wanted to end this segment with something romantic in honor of Wisconsin's newest spouses, and this is an overlooked love song by the Nonbelievers, George and Ira Gershwin, sung by Kiri T. Kanawa, Love Walked In.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
This is Father's Day weekend, and what do atheists and agnostics do on Father's Day?
We honor our real fathers.
In my book, Losing Faith in Faith, From Preacher to Atheist, which was published by FFRF, I dedicated it to Norman Barker, my only father. I spent all those years pretending to worship a pretend father, our Father who art in heaven.
His name's Art? Our Father who art in heaven?
Maybe his name should be Artless or Heartless. Our Father who art in heaven. If God really existed, I think he should win the worst father of the year or of the millennium for plotting to sacrifice his own son to appease his own vanity.
Julia Sweeney talks about the character of our Heavenly Father in her play, her wonderful play, Letting Go of God. Here she is talking about Abraham and Jephthah.
Okay. I knew the Bible had nutty stories. I mean, I knew there were nutty stories, but I thought they'd be wedged in amongst an ocean of inspiration and history. But instead, the stories just got darker and even more convoluted. This Old Testament God makes the grisliest tests of people's loyalty. Like when he asks Abraham to murder his son Isaac. As a kid, we were taught to admire it. I caught my breath reading it. We were taught to admire it. What kind of sadistic test of loyalty is that, to ask someone to kill his or her own child? And isn't the proper answer, no? I will not kill my child or any child, even if it means eternal punishment in hell? At the next Bible study class, Father Tom reminded us that Isaac represents what matters to Abraham most, and that's what God asks us to give up for him. I said, but loving and protecting and caring for the welfare of your child is such a deep ethical loving instinct and act. So what if what matters to you most is your own loving behavior? Should we be willing to give up our ethics for God? But then I found out that Abraham is not the only person willing to murder his own child for God. They're all over the place in the Bible. For example, in the book of Judges, this guy named Jephthah tells God that if he can win this battle, he will kill the first person who greets him when he comes home as a burnt offering. And who is the first person he sees? His only child, his beloved daughter, who runs up to him playing with tambourines and singing, "Hi, Daddy!" What? And does God say, "No, don't kill your only child as a burnt offering to me"? Or even, "Jephthah, who did you expect to be the first person to greet you when you came home?" No, it appears the most important point of this story is that Jephthah allows his beautiful daughter to go off into the woods for 2 months to mourn her virginity. I kept thinking, run, run, before she comes back and he kills her by lighting her on fire. Even if you leave aside the creepy sacrifice your own offspring stories, the laws of the Old Testament were really hard to take. Leviticus and Deuteronomy are filled with archaic, just hard to imagine laws. Like if a man has sex with an animal, both the man and the animal should be killed. Which I could almost understand for the man. But the animal? Because the animal was a willing participant? Because now the animals have the taste of human sex and won't be satisfied?
That is really funny. I haven't heard that for a while. Julia Sweeney's a genius. And that's Julia Sweeney from her play, Letting Go of God. So happy Father's Day to all you real fathers. Happy Father's Day, Dan.
Thank you.
Who truly want the best and know how to care for your kids.
Coming up, we'll be talking with Andrianne, the author and producer who worked with and who married Carl Sagan on the 1980 Cosmos and who wrote for the new Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And the final episode of that last series show ended with a very moving tribute to Carl Sagan. They played him reading his recitation, Pale Blue Dot, and we're going to do that too.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. How fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
And that was Carl Sagan reading his recitation, Pale Blue Dot. And Carl Sagan does live on. His ideas do live on. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for our interview with Andrianne, who's the widow of Carl Sagan, who's also the author and producer who spent her life promoting science and reason. And on her Father's Day, let's go out with a song I wrote called My Father's House, which appears on the Beware of Dogma album, produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
let me out of here. I found my own place, I've left my father's house behind. A normal dad is really glad to realize.
This is Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And that music we're hearing is from the new Cosmos series, Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey. The music for the series was written by Alan Silvestri. Gorgeous music. This selection is called Theory of Evolution. Listen for more of Silvestri's music from the new Cosmos series as we go out of each segment today. Andrianne was a co-writer and producer for both Cosmos series. First, the 1980 PBS documentary, Cosmos, A Personal Journey, hosted by the late Carl Sagan, whom she married in 1981. She's also the creator of the new, a creator, producer, and writer of the new follow-up series, Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson, which we've all been watching with pleasure. Andrianne has had a long career in science and in writing. She was responsible, for example, for the selection of the music on the Voyager Golden Record for the exploratory missions of the solar system, Voyager 1 and 2. And she's also an author. She and Carl Sagan co-wrote the books Comet, Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors, sections of the book The Demon Haunted World.
So we're so pleased to have you back on the show, Anne. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, and congratulations on this wonderful series.
Thank you, Annie Laurie. I'm so glad to be back with you and Dan, and really thrilled by the embrace of Cosmos, of this new Cosmos, and the enduring appeal of the original series, and just very happy today.
You must be very satisfied. You know, the series just had its finale, and what a ride for you.
What a great ride. I've been working on this for 7 years. For most of that time, I've been working with people I truly admire. And to know that the scientific perspective has been shown in 181 countries, in prime time in every single one of them, in the United States, on a commercial broadcast network. What a victory for reason and for science to present the case for science to this widest possible audience. It's the largest rollout of a television series in history.
Really? Wow.
Really. Yep.
Well, and not just the case for science, which is made strongly, but the beauty, the awe, the majesty, and the people who are just driven by curiosity to know things, how they came alive during this whole series.
That's what, you know, I've been sitting on Twitter and looking at the messages that come in at such a rate. And, you know, when I started this idea to do this project, when I set out to do it, I kept saying, as I would pitch it from place to place with my colleague Mitchell Cannell, I kept saying, you know, I think there's a yearning for this kind of programming, that the original Cosmos series remains so popular because it occupies an untenanted ecological niche. Of course, it's Carl and his everlasting appeal, but also that blend of skepticism and wonder in equal measure. I know there are people out there who really want to see this kind of show, and it's so thrilling and gratifying that turned out to be true.
In 1980, I was, as you know, a practicing evangelical minister, but I watched almost every single one of the original Cosmos series with Carl Sagan. I was transfixed by the data and the information, of course, but just this, how do you describe him? He's like he's your favorite uncle talking to you on the TV.
Well, kind of the humanity comes through so clearly, the warmth.
Yeah, and then Neil deGrasse Tyson carries that tradition along.
He really does. He's done, you know, his is a splendid performance, really great performance. I think there's no other living person who could have done a better job.
He's like a rock star of science, isn't he?
Absolutely. He really is.
But he comes across...
Very proud of him.
He comes across so kind of accessible and warm, like you just want to sit down and gab. He's not some big stature of a person, you know?
And that's who he really is, personally. Hmm. He is that very, very warm, engaging person who loves to talk with people about science and what he's learned about science. And I found in, you know, Steve Soter and I wrote both the original series with Carl, and then we wrote, the new series. And I can't imagine a better person to deliver our scripts than Neil is now.
And kids love Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's just a lovable guy.
He is. Truly, up close and far away, mm-hmm. He really is.
It seemed to me in watching the new series that your voice predominated. I mean, you were the creator and you were a writer. How much of the new series is you?
Well, I was very lucky because thanks to Seth MacFarlane, I was able to get complete and total creative control over the series. But of course, I was working with, astonishingly talented collaborators. Brandon Braga,
yeah.
Jason Clark, Rainer Gombos, who led the VFX team, people who could really, in Brandon's case, a creative collaborator that had such tremendous prime-time show-running television experience that I felt once he came on board, I just had that partner, which I needed. Now, the voice, I think everyone would admit, is my voice. You know, it's, I did, Steve Soter and I collaborated on the original scripts, and he left the project 2 years ago, and I did some 25 drafts of the scripts in the intervening years, in the 2 years that have passed. And I take full responsibility for Cosmos. Every word of Cosmos was scripted. There's not a single, it's all from those scripts. And so, choosing, every finaling every single shot, something like 1,500, between 1,500 and 2,000 VFX shots, some of which had 20, 30 iterations. I finaled every one. Hmm. Along with Brandon. So, directed the final episode, directed all of the actors, including Neil. And I guess I, I did have a pretty central role. And
But it shows.
Obviously, none of it would have happened without this astonishing team of collaborators.
But I think what Annie Laurie is trying to say is that having read your writings and known you, there were some of these lines that Neil deGrasse Tyson delivered where we say, yeah, that's Anne. You know, she had to have written that line. That's just gorgeous, you know.
I wrote every line.
Oh, you did?
There you go.
I picked Steve Soter's brain because he is an astronomer, a leading expert on climate change, and many other subjects that we touched upon. But I take full responsibility for the writing.
You take full credit for the writing.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
What an achievement. And I want to ask, how much time did this take? How many years and hours? And
It took about 3 years to find the right partner, and that all happened as soon as Neil introduced me to Seth, then that side of things began to really fall into place. And it took 4 years to write and to prep and produce and post-produce the series.
Well, you must be so happy. And there were a lot of, there was red carpet affairs on this too, weren't there?
Yes, we went around, Neil and I went around the world, promoting the premiere, showing the first episode, and went around the world together. It was fantastic. We had a great, you know, it was interesting to see that in Australia and Asia and Europe, the responses were all the same. It was, you know, that people were really blown away. They were just like, this is amazing to see special effects of that caliber, not in the service of blowing things up.
Yeah.
Although some things, there are some explosions in cosmos, but in the service of knowing the cosmos as we understand it at this point. That was, everyone who worked on this, I think of Bill Pope, the director of photography, who also directed many of the episodes along with Brandon and me. He was the director of photography on the Matrix movies and a huge Spider-Man, just a host of blockbuster movies.
You can see all of that as we watch the series. We have to take a break, Anne, but we'll come back and talk. We're talking with Andrianne, writer, producer, author, creator of the Cosmos series. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
So stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And during the break, and you were telling us you've been on the road almost incessantly for the last 2 years, making
yes.
this L.A.?
Yes. Yes, I was living in L.A. My home is in upstate New York, and I was living in L.A. in a hotel room for 2 years. And for part of that time, I was on location shooting Cosmos and also in New Mexico for about 6-7 weeks shooting the sequences that took place in the Ship of the Imagination. And on the cosmic calendar also.
So we're talking with Andrianne, the creator of the new Cosmos series, the writer on the old series. And you also, Anne, told us during the break that you got to go, you were on location for most of the shooting of the series, all around the world.
Yes. Oh, yes, we went all around the world. There was one location, Iceland, which I couldn't go to because I had to be back in Los Angeles actually editing the show. And, you know, doing the production duties that had to keep to that schedule, which was absolutely grueling but thrilling because of the wonderful people who were working on the project. It was, I was so moved by their commitment to Cosmos, and invariably people who had come from motion pictures and probably pulled down a much bigger fee on those big blockbuster movies would say to me, the chance to work on something that actually means something is unique.
Yeah. And in the last episode, which aired this last Sunday night, not only a tribute to Carl, which we played in the first half of our show, and not only also emphasizing science, but the scientific method, the beauty of questioning everything and keeping an open mind and being curious and what drives scientists to want to know. That was just an amazing final episode.
Thank you so much, Dan. I felt that it was, you know, at that point, having taken the viewer on a 12-hour odyssey across space and time, I thought that in the last episode I could make that cry from the heart.
Yeah.
Which was the reason for doing the whole series.
And you're also telling us during the break, well, you're finally home in Ithaca area and your birthday week and celebrating Father's Day with your dad. Can you tell us something about him?
Annie Laurie, I would love to. My dad is 97 years old. He lives in his own house across the road from me. And for his whole, well, my whole life, he has been a teacher of goodness and openness and love to me. And me and my children and our family, my brother, we all truly adore him, but also value the way that he is so alive at 97, so full of life, appreciating every single moment of life. And he's teaching all of us how to go forward, how to move forward in life. And, you know, we share exactly the same values, so we've always had a very close relationship. But I just can't say enough about him. This Father's Day, all of us will be united in this great love for him.
And to honor our real earthly fathers, who we do know really do exist.
And really? Well, I've always said my father has always been like a mother to me. And he combines the best of both roles.
Now, you know, the reaction has to have been phenomenal. But do you want to tell us something about, you know...
Well, the religious right was going after the series,
that's
too.
Right. That must be kind of amusing to you.
Yes, but, you know, it hasn't been as energetic as I had expected. I had expected, you know, because I go online and I see what people say. I expected to see, a much more kind of mainstream version of reaction to our stand on evolution by natural selection and our stand on climate change. And I was really surprised that the only negative reaction has been very much on the fringe.
Well,
you know, very limp.
Yeah.
Very limp. As opposed to something which would be more alarming, which would be that you feel like there was a more of a consensus of rejection. Not at all. I feel like the embrace has been overwhelming, and the voices of negativity have been, you know, very weak.
So we're moving on, aren't we?
I think the pendulum is swinging back our way. I really think so.
Well, it's about time.
It's about time, and we've done a lot of damage in those decades. I mean, that was the original reason to do this new series for me, was because there was such hostility to science and reason. And it seemed like we were slipping backwards in a very distressing way. But now I have to say, I've really got to say that I feel like, you know, our time is coming. I think people are interested in science. People are interested in solving our climate problems and in exploring the universe and knowing more about it. And there's only one way to do that.
Well, this series is part of the solution. Series like this actually sway public opinion, I think.
That's my deepest hope for the series.
The DVD's coming out, or the DVD is out this week, right?
DVD is out today, Blu-ray out today, just in time for the aforementioned Father's Day and for graduation. And I think that, you know, it's my hope that the success of the DVD, of the series, will mean that the more people will, there'll be more programming like Cosmos, which is my fondest hope.
Well, you have at least one sale here.
Thank you, Dan, thank you.
Now, is there, are there special features to the DVD? Is there some?
Yes, I'm very proud of it. There are 2 hours of additional programming. There's a special feature at the end that you get if you go through the 13 episodes, the special features, the enhanced programming, the making of. It's a very articulate bunch of people who made this show, and I'm proud of all of them, and I think it's fun to see. In here, some of the backstory of what was going on.
Well, then we missed a few episodes too. This is a way to catch up on the whole thing, then.
Yes, And then there's a navigational device for the cosmic calendar, so you can do your own exploring various moments in time.
Now, did I hear a rumor that you're working on something new, children's cosmos or something like that?
You may have heard the rumor. I thus far haven't.
Oh.
Not ready to announce anything, but I must say I've taken tremendous pleasure in the number of people who have pleaded for a new cosmos, a new series.
Thank you, Anne. We're talking with Anne Driane, the writer, the inspiration, the creator, producer of both Cosmos series, 1980, and the new one, which is now available on DVD, Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. Thank you, Anne, for being on the show.
Stunning achievement, Anne.
Thank you so much, Dan, Annie, Lori. Enjoy Alan Silvestri's wonderful music for Cosmos.
Thank you, Dave McCann, for producing our show. You can learn all you want to know about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/news/radio.
Join us at ffrf.org. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.